revolution sounds. Don't you know ho, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the world, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
That revolution is coming, and it's coming through our own actions. It's coming through our own work and intention. And we can redeem our situation by the work that we do. And this is the Peace and Justice Show. My name is Chris, and I've been doing this for a long time. And I'm shouting out today to all the communities here in Northern California as listeners who support us and those of you who just listen to us. We invite you to become part of the KZFR family. All of you in Williams, Colusa, Yuba City, Live Oak, Gridley, Palermo, Thermalito, Durham, Willows, Orland, Corning, Los Molinos, Biggs, all of you in these smaller communities too, and out dotted farmhouses in the countryside, all of you are part of our family. And it's time to step up and to help us to 895-0131. The area code is 530. And I hope that you are within the range of my voice right now, and that you can get to the phones. We have two lovely women on there, and we are waiting to hear from you. I have in the studio with me Laurel Avalon, who produced this program for 20 years and is helping me with some of the engineering, because we're going to have a fast-paced show today, and I don't want to waste too much time. Just so that you know that the show started during the Gulf War in 1992. I felt just absolutely on fire about joining this new endeavor, this community radio station that was started up by Eric Matisse and all those years back, and about talking about peace and justice and ending war, and moving our country away from war, and the misuse of our funds by the bloated military establishment. Of course, there's many, many more justice issues that we have covered over the years, and I want to start off the show today with a special guest. His name is Dave Waddell. He is a contributor to ChicoSol.org, and that is S-O-L. He has practiced and are taught journalism for more than 40 years. Dave Waddell spent nearly 20 years as a newspaper reporter and editor, mostly at the Reading Record Searchlight. In 1996, he joined the journalism faculty at CSU Chico, where he advised the Orion, the student newspaper, for 15-plus years, and subsequently retired as professor emeritus. I don't know if I ever say that right. Dave Waddell has reported frequently in recent years about law enforcement matters, including officer-involved shootings in Butte County. That is going to be our subject today. He is a strong supporter of the people's right to know about public matters. And that is what your kind of journalism means to me, the fact that you do this kind of reporting, because nowhere else is this found except on Chico Soul in our local area that I'm aware of. So, Dave Waddell, welcome to KZFR.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I would like to get right to the point of the matter. We've had officer-involved shootings going on for many years, and you have delved very deeply into this. And we were going to start with the case of Desmond Phillips, because his dad continues to carry forward, through the love of his son, a quest for justice for Desmond. Go ahead.
Okay, well, as you know, that was a case where Desmond was in mental crisis, and his father called for medical aid, and the first responders didn't handle it very well, ended up touching him, he ended up picking up knives, and eventually his father felt threatened enough to ask the police to come in and get him, and the police kicked in the door and ended up shooting Desmond, shooting at Desmond 16 times, hitting him 9 times. One of my more recent stories come out of some depositions that were given by officers in those cases, and also the Tyler Rushing case. But one of the more interesting new developments, I think, was what the officer said when they kicked in the door. And the officer that tased Desmond, Jared Cumber, Desmond still had held 2 knives at the time, but the look on Desmond's face was placid. It was like he was looking past them and not even seeing these officers there. And then once he was tased, he went down, and the officers mistakenly didn't get on top of him, and he rose up. And one of the sergeants said in his testimony that when Desmond got up, he did a wild chicken dance, which contradicted what the shooting officer said. The shooting officer said they were attacked with knives. Well, their stories differed too, but they were attacked in some manner by Desmond with knives. I think it's shown that at most Desmond had a stick in his hand when he was killed. But some of those are new developments. One of the expert reports in the Desmond case said that for the plaintiff said that called the shooting had all the makings of a panic shooting by Officer Alex Fleer, and a contagious or sympathetic shooting by Officer Ganabin, Jeremy Ganabin.
And I think Desmond's dad always talks about is what a fast period of time this all happened between opening that door and his son dead on the floor.
I think I've timed it many times and now I'm drawing a blank, but I think it was 7 seconds from the time the door was kicked open until shots were fired. And that's, you know, he goes down, he gets up, and it was almost, very fast. So that put a whole light on that shooting, I think. And then was put on by the district attorney. Less than one, this is according to some UC Berkeley research, but less than 1% of officers are stabbed to death, okay? Most officers, over 90%, are shot by guns because of the prevalence of guns in our society.
Right.
But any time somebody's shot, and they've had a knife or something, it's blown out of proportion in terms of the risk it is to the officers who have this soft body armor these days that prevents them, that protects them against that sort of attack, largely. In this one study, you were more likely to be beaten to death as a police officer than stabbed to death.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that puts different light on the Desmond shooting. Officer Fleer was also involved in the Tyler Rushing case, in a rather bizarre way.
Yeah, and you showed me some pictures before the show, and it appeared that Tyler Rushing was obtunded or down. He was half naked. The room was a mess. He did not move when the officer came into the room. So what is it? Why did they kill him?
This was after he was dead or nearly dead that he was tased. You know, he was shot by a security guard first, and then he was in a bathroom at a downtown title company for quite a long time, 45 minutes bleeding out. But one thing that hasn't been publicized, I don't think ever, but is in these, Tyler Rushing really wanted to live. He devised, he took a plastic bag out of a garbage can and took like a strap off a lady's makeup bag and devised this thing where he tied himself up. So he could have lived much longer than the typical person could have. Even though he wasn't communicating with the officers, he was definitely trying to save himself. And then...
I don't understand what you're saying. He was in a mental health crisis, but he was trying to contain himself so that he wouldn't do anything?
No, he was trying to blanch the wound or whatever the right
word. Oh, I see. He
by
was
pulling that plastic tight against him.
And
one of the observers, one of the doctors who looked at it, called it ingenious what he did. And he didn't have any training, but so he was definitely trying to live. And the thing about Ramsey's report, the district attorney's report, was that they couldn't find, as hard as he tried, he could not find any drugs in Tyler's system except a little bit of marijuana. And he ran many tests trying to find something, and there was nothing in it. They could not attribute, okay, so when they went in and got Tyler with a dog, Tyler fought very hard. Mm. And they attribute that to him being on some sort of drug. When in fact, an expert report found that that's what a human being does when they're attacked by an animal, is flail around like that. And so he literally used the last of his adrenaline, every last molecule, fighting off this dog and these officers who were reaching at him, and then he died. And then he was very near death. And so he's laying on the floor. His pants have been pulled down below his butt during the struggle, and he's prone. His arms can be seen out, stretched out. And Officer Fleer, who's an Iraq war veteran, who saw action in Iraq war veteran, and we weren't told about that after the Desmond shooting by Police Chief Mike O'Brien.
Which was just 3 months earlier.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he thought he saw Tyler move. And he decided he was going to tase him. And nobody else saw him move. He didn't move, according to the body camera stuff. So that was very, very disturbing behavior, I think. And then Tyler was dragged out of the room, handcuffed, dragged out of the room, and he lay on that floor for 10 hours before he was removed to a mortuary, which was inexcusable.
Oh, that's terrible. Is there any chance he could have lived with the injury that he had?
Yes, and that's another, you know, argument between the pathologists. But definitely, with the work he did on himself, he could have lived. But they should have gone in earlier in other ways without a dog, according to the other experts.
Hmm. You know, I hate to talk about our district attorney, but it seems like the officers can pretty much get away with anything. There's just not much self-reflection there or repercussions for these kind of things.
It doesn't seem like it, and, you know, that breeds more police shootings, according to the research. The biggest deterrent to police shootings, I think, experts such as Franklin Zimring in his book When Police Kill have found, is administration. When you have a police chief who, you know, demands great accountability for shootings, you have far fewer shootings. But my opinion, the district attorney always tries to put a pretty face on these killings in some manner, whether it's by demonizing the victim or making it seem more serious to the threat to the officer than it really is.
You also reported, or at least are considering, the information about another killing. In fact, you've covered all of the killings, but one of which is Myra Michalizio, who was 56 and died April 2018 by police shooting. And the response of the police, I mean, I want you to talk about the case itself, but the way that the family was treated after this murder versus how the family of Desmond Phillips was treated after this murder. Can you discuss that a little bit and then go into Myra's case?
Yeah, I'll discuss that. And I've only been to one press conference, but I showed up for the Desmond Phillips one, and I had to leave. It started late, and I had to go teach a class at the time. But I did show up because they said it was at the police department. So I showed up at the police department, and there's these three officers out in the parking lot, and David Phillips is there. I remember he said something to me, and so I go to the front door, and the police department's locked, okay? And so I get on the phone. I go, is there a press conference? And they go, oh, it's down the street or something. I go, okay, I'm getting all nervous now. And so this one officer who has this exterior vest comes up to me and kind of points me in the right direction. So I get in my car and go down a little bit to this old filling station, and another officer's there to screen people coming in. And he looks at my ID, and I go back into this cinder block building, which I guess provided enough protection for this press conference they were going to have. And eventually, so that's how. Now, in the Michalizio case, when they issued the report, I told the family that they were given this press conference. They showed up, four of them, were invited into the press conference, and treated very respectfully. And they, you know, so. And that was at the district attorney's office, near the district attorney's office. So two very, very different.
Whereas Desmond's dad, David, was kept out on a parking lot and surrounded by police?
Well, I don't know if he was surrounded by police, but nobody but the media was allowed into that
Desmond, one.
But the family was allowed into the Michalizio one.
And I don't know if we pointed out that Desmond Phillips was African American,
right,
and Myra is white.
Right.
Was
there were no black
tense.
People at the press conference for Desmond.
Okay, so tell us a little more about Myra.
Well, that was another really tragic killing of a mentally ill person. But she was, and there's much in dispute about that, I think, the more you look at the case. And the biggest dispute is where the officer was when he fired, because she was backing up in a vehicle. And it appears to me that almost all of the shots came through the side window, the driver's side back seat window, into her back. So how much danger was he in when he killed her is a open question, still an open question in my mind, and I'm still trying to get answers about that. But the idea that she was trying to run over a police, now she was in mental crisis and saying crazy stuff, and I think she may have pointed a finger gun and said she was going to call in the FBI, etc. But she, you know, she had no history of violence. She was not a criminal, and 2 days before the killing, outside her house on Lincoln Boulevard in Palermo, there had been an accident, and the CHP officer the CHP officer wrote this up in a little narrative. But she came out and asked him what was going on, and he told her, and she asked him if she could help him. And he said no, he had it handled. And then she walked away, and as she walked away, she turned back to him and said, "Stay safe." And the officer later reflected that that was the first time in his 8 years as a CHP officer that anybody had come up on a scene of an accident and asked to help him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, 48 hours later, she's portrayed as a cop killer, when in fact she's probably doesn't even understand what she's being told by officers in the state she was in.
Right. You know, you've been following this a lot, and I was wondering, as a result of these killings and the pressure on Chief O'Brien here in Chico, and and Carrie, Corey Horney, if there's been any change since all of this happened.
Well, there hasn't been a shooting by the Chico Police Department since July of 2017. I don't know if that's progress or not. I hope so.
Yeah.
There have been five since that time by the sheriff's officers. Mm-hmm. The last one hasn't been reported on yet. Richard Moulton, he was shot by 9 different officers, and some of the killings by the sheriff's office have been like Myra's were very questionable, I think, or especially that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, people have been working very hard on this issue and demanding crisis intervention training, implicit bias training. They are also doing different activities. There's a group called Concerned Citizens for Justice. There's the Cop Watch group, and there's this Justice for Desmond group, who continue to meet, rally, and march for justice for Desmond and everybody who followed him. And I'm wondering, in your opinion, what the next step would be for people. As you've really delved into these cases, how do you see a way forward?
Well, I think, I think you need a strong police chief and a contemporary police chief. I mean, officers should be, if they have to shoot, they should be shooting and reassessing, you know, and not emptying their guns. So I think I think that's more important even than having a citizen review board where you get into a lot of politics. Excuse me. So I think it's really critical to have that kind of leadership at the top. Zimring, the professor, he says there should be no shooting, except in very rare circumstances, the attacker has a baseball bat or a knife, and that there should be stop shooting when there's fleeing. I think Myra Michalizio was fleeing. Mm-hmm. I think Breanne Sharp was fleeing when she was shot in the back of the head.
And she was a 19-year-old.
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
So I think while, you know, people... the average citizen is a softer target for a knife, say, than a police officer. So I think that when the average person hears, "Well, you can't shoot if they have a knife," you know, that alarms the average person. But I think police officers are trained to have most cases they should be able to avoid killing somebody.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to say also that I'm very concerned about veterans coming back from wars who may have PTSD, who have not been adequately assessed and treated for their mental health problems. And Dave Waddell, we only have a minute left, but I would like you to tell us about Chico Soul and your work a little bit, because we are linked through the work that we do here on KZFR and public affairs programming and your work in the community.
Okay. Well, Chico Soul started a dozen years ago by Leslie Layton, and I've been involved for 3 years. I've done a lot of investigative reporting, and especially in the police area of late. And we don't have any advertisers. We don't have anybody telling us what to do. We try to report in the public interest as we see it. And we always, like the radio station, we need community support. We have a donate button on our webpage, chicosoul.org, and so we appreciate the support when we can get it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I urge everyone to call 895-0131, since this is our time to appeal to you, but also to go to chicosoul.org and check this out. I want to remind you that this has been a year of unprecedented attacks on journalists and attrition, with media shrinkage and large corporate takeovers. The result has been less press freedom. Reporters Without Borders keeps a World Press Freedom Index, and in 2019, hatred of journalists has degenerated into violence and fewer countries where journalists can work freely. There's never before have a U.S. journalist been subjected to so many death threats. Courageous investigative reporters like Dave Waddell continue to promote and defend the freedom to be informed. When we cater to silence and self-censorship, that helps the consolidation. Journalists are losing jobs. They are losing jobs faster than coal miners, according to the CEO of Mother Jones, Monica Barlerstein, who I heard at Bioneers last weekend. Her point was that the public must take ownership of the news, and that includes here at KZFR. You are what drives this. We cannot do this without you. The number here is 895-0131, dedicated phone. Folks are out there. They would love to take your call. It's easy, it's quick, and it's so appreciated. I want to thank you, Dave Waddell, for being here at KZFR and for all your work.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, peace to you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we're gonna have a little transition with some music. Laurel Avalon is our DJ today, and she's going to put some music on for you.
We could be the healing. When you're feeling all alone, we could be the reason to find the strength to carry on. In a world that's so divided, we shall overcome. We can be the healing. We can be the flower in the gun. We could be the healing. We can be the flower in the gun.
What would I say to my son or to my daughter? If they came and asked me about these days, what kind of reason could I give for all the hate that's standing in the way? Wish I could tell them that nobody's gonna judge them, and every stranger on the block is gonna love them. No bully in the world could ever hurt them, but I can't say that today. Whoa.
No one could ever take your pride from you. Speak your truth and let your spirit. Cause we could be the healing.
Try to reach too high. What could I say to every girl who was betrayed and told to keep the pain locked inside? Wish I could say nobody's ever gonna judge me. Every stranger on the block is gonna love me. No bully in the world is gonna hurt me, but I can't say that today.
We can be the healing. We can be the flower in the gun. I love that. That's Michael Franti. And Katie Irwin called from Flagstaff. I love Katie Irwin, and I send her that song and all of my love, okay? Thank you, thank you, thank you to Katie and everybody who's calling to support Community Radio.
Gail gave you a hug.
Gail gives you a hug, too. So it's 11:59. I'd like to thank our underwriters before we go any further because they're part of this and they are critical throughout the year for keeping KZFR on an even keel financially. So I'd like to thank first Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings as well as craft beer and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner with live music every Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday evenings. Located in Chico at 2359 The Esplanade, you can also find Farmstar Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. Also, Sonia Airy, a local Allstate insurance agent. Sonia is concerned about the community and helps families understand their immediate and long-term needs and goals. Whether you're protecting your life, home, auto, boat, or motorcycle, Sonia Airy can help. They also do 401 rollovers. Sonia can be reached by calling or texting 345-2351. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Community Radio, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I'd like to also complete thanking my underwriters at this time so we can move into our interviews again. I would like to thank Affordable Automotive, locally owned by Mike Button and family since 1996. Affordable Automotive grows their business one customer at a time, repairing or maintaining any car, truck, or SUV, ensuring a safe and reliable vehicle. Affordable Automotive also has financing available at 2106 Park Avenue in Chico. Appointments by calling 892-1774 and at chicoautomotive.com. They have been voted best in Chico the last 6 years in a row. Wow. Also, Norton Buffalo Hall and Paradise Performing Arts Center presenting Joy Will Find a Way on Sunday, November 10th at the Paradise Performing Arts Center. This collaboration from musicians, poets, actors, dancers, and visual artists have created a narrative of campfire remembrance, recovery, and resurgence with two shows, 2 and 5:30. Details and ticket at NortonBuffaloHall.com. More information by calling 762-1490. And before we move on, I also want to forward promote two shows. Next November 1st, the Peace and Justice Program will be interviewing veterans, including the new Executive Director of Veterans for Peace. And what I was trying to get at is on November 8th, Bill Mash will be doing a special program, a celebration of life and recovery for Campfire. And I just want to urge anyone who is having emotional difficulties during this time as we are in this windy fire season to go to ButteCountyRecovers.org. Just wanted to make sure I got that in today. So I have two incredibly wonderful women here in the studio with me.
Laurel, want your money
for a worthy cause.
I know. So both of you are peace activists, and I'm going to be interviewing Diane in a few minutes. But Laurel Avalon has done this show for 20 years and been through many, many pledge drives. And what is the successful way to get people to pick up the phones, Laurel?
Oh, just do what you're doing, Chris. You know, do a really good show like you're doing so far. I mean, having Dave on was wonderful. I mean, it was eye-opening, and it was, to me, such a service for us to be able to hear from someone who was there, who knows what happened, who has been on the front line for, you know, these years, you know, reporting on these kinds of things that go on in our community. What a great service you have done by having Dave, by starting the show off with Dave. Just keep doing the good programming where you help us to understand what's going on in our community and in the planet every Friday. Yeah. It's so valuable. Thank you so much for keeping on the tradition of having the Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR.
Yeah, and I am so honored by the work that my guests do. Yeah. My job in these long-form interviews is to let people speak and just kind of get out of the way when I can.
Yeah.
Sometimes my emotions get in the way, but I am so appreciative for all the work of the peace activists. I call him a peace activist, even though he of course, considers himself a journalist. But all the people that are working for justice and truth and transparency and all the different things.
So let's give folks the number so they can call in and be part of this and help keep this kind of programming coming forward every Friday.
895-0131.
Call now to support Peace and Social Justice Show that's been running for 20 years.
Yeah. At least. Oh, 20. Oh, more. Since 19... 19- 92 or 1?
Yeah, 90, 91. No, and I think it was 92. But it's
the first invasion of Iraq.
And Diane Suzuki, you've been on for a long time. You continue to host One World Music, and you alternate with Shoshana on Planet Waves on Wednesdays. And is it 12:30 to 3?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday, yes.
And you often have peace activists on your show, too. And
as my proposal, I included short interviews and readings and on environmental and social justice issues and peace issues.
So when you call, you're not just supporting the Peace and Justice Program. You're supporting all of us as we work together as one to get the $9,000 that we still need in order for this show to continue. And I want to thank everyone who's given so far, and that includes me, of course. I gave money, but Katie. Oh, Mercedes. Thank you, Mercedes. Beth. And also Orion. Orion is my daughter, and I just sort of twist her arm a little bit. But thank you, Orion. Thank you all. We need to go on to our next interview. And
But do pick up the phones at 895-0131. Support Chris and all her work that she does for this show. I'm sure you can imagine how many hours she puts into it to prepare for these shows and get these amazing guests.
Yeah. Thank you, Diane. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to put Diane's mic down, and I hope I have on the line with me Jackson Moore. Are you there, Jackson?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for waiting on hold. We appreciate that. A few weeks ago, Alexander Cruz came into the Peace and Justice Program and talked about some of the risks of 5G technology. And can you remind our listeners what 5G is? Because a lot of us are really not paying much attention to what the telecom companies are up to.
Yeah, well, 5G is being rolled out in a hurry all across the United States. The government is offering billions of dollars in incentive programs to utilities companies to create a smart grid that will be perceived by we the people as more sustainable and environmentally friendly. But in order to qualify for these billions of dollars in incentive programs, the companies have to commit to having a certain number of devices ready to go for a mass rollout and installation. So this has resulted in companies going to manufacturers that are already producing high volumes of smart grid tech, like the dangerous smart meters being sent from China, or the 5G towers, which are a technology the military has made back in the 50s as a weapon. So, yeah, that's 5G is supposed to be something that provides us with quicker, faster data on our phones and Wi-Fi and things like that, but it really isn't that much faster than 4G. And it is actually harmful to our health and the environment. So we're trying to bring that to the attention of the community and see if we can slow or stop that 5G installation.
So what risk do the people of Chico have? What's happening here?
So here in Chico, it looks like the FCC recently had passed a rule that eliminates the local and state ability to vote on 5G. Now, some cities and counties have passed ordinances that limit the installation of 5G, but very few have been able to completely stop it since this new FCC rule that overrides our local rights. In these ordinances, cities have set stipulations such as keeping 5G cell towers at least 500 feet from a residence, or reserving the city's right to regulate and monitor the harmful EMF and radiation frequency emissions. But with the new 5CC rule, for the new 5G FCC rule, they have restricted the city's rights in determining what is even safe and healthy in exposure to frequency emissions. So this is regardless of the overwhelming data that proves the 5G emissions are detrimental to our health and the health of the environment. And it is actually a blatant infringement of our constitutional rights, you know, in deciding that a city, as a city, we know we are supposed to be able to choose what harmful devices are or are not imposed upon us, but many municipalities are now pursuing legal action against the FCC in order to completely block the 5G rollout. Yeah. I strongly encourage people to tell our city council members that we don't want this federal government, along with the FCC and utilities companies, to steamroll our rights as citizens, whether that entails taking legal action against the FCC or establishing a strict ordinance that completely restricts the FCC FCC's 5G installation, or both of those. We need to rise up either way and stand our ground and let it be known that city of Chico shouldn't fall victim to the draconian authoritarian tyranny of the federal government and the FCC.
Yeah, and, you know, I shortened your interview a little bit there, and I didn't mean to do that, but I would like you to let us know a little bit more about what the timeline is in terms of our response here in Chico.
So as far as I'm aware, it looks like in December sometime there's going to be another city council hearing where we have an opportunity to go into the town hall there and publicly make the city council members aware of our concerns. But in talking with the mayor, it looks like he's saying their hands are tied, that the city doesn't have the resources, legally or otherwise, to completely stop the 5G rollout according to the new FCC rule. Our ability to even vote on whether we want this in our community is completely restricted. So, yeah, like I mentioned, I think the only thing we can really do moving forward is create awareness and try to organize some kind of ordinance that completely stops the 5G rollout, because even if it's just 500 feet from a resident, that's still creating a lot of harm to people nearby and the environment as a whole.
Yeah, I know about bees. It's killing so much wildlife. I just want to tell people, I cannot give you a call to action on this, but I do want to just tell you how you would write to a city council member if you were so inclined. It's their first name, their with a period, and then their last name, and then at chicoca.gov. And that is how you reach all of the people on the city council. And oftentimes, your contact with them outside of city council meetings is even more important than inside, I have found. And so would you like any last words, Jackson Moore? And thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time today and your knowledge.
Oh, of course. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. This is the importance of having community radio to get the word out and create awareness here at the grassroots level. Yeah, I would just let people know the overwhelming data showing that technology like 5G is harmful. There are studies showing that there are cancer-causing effects and negative neurological effects of 5G exposures. It's all very well documented from the FDA, the EPA, the National Institute for Occupational Health and Safety, U.S. Air Force, the Pentagon, who use this 5G technology as a crowd control weapon, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, U.S. Department of Interior. The list goes on. There are so many reputable institutions, including over 20 countries all around the world, and thousands of studies that show us. There's also fire danger. These towers are powered by lithium and propane, so they can catch fire easily, they overheat easily, and they don't even work that well in high temperatures. The World Health Organization has told us that 5G frequencies are carcinogenic. There's an increased degradation of plant life when near the 5G towers. As you mentioned, it harms insects, and now we know birds. It would require us to cut down more trees, which in Chico, our slogan is the city of trees. So that's obviously something we want to fight against. It's an infringement on our privacy and security as well. It allows more backdoor hacking into our data with this 5G technology. Mm-hmm. If you doubt the overwhelming data, just remember that the head of the FCC was a lawyer for Verizon before he became the head of the FCC. And we have Harvard studies showing that the FCC is funded by the same industries it's supposed to be regulating. So a lot of people aren't going to get the full truth from merely accepting the mainstream corporate talking points at face value. Strongly encourage everyone to simply do their research. The information is out there. You can go to a website called ehtrust.org. You can also check out our Stop 5G Chico Facebook page. It has a lot of great info there. And, of course, be sure to remember to take preventative measures such as, you know, turning your phone into airplane mode when you're not using it, and trying to hook up through Ethernet instead of having your Wi-Fi. That's a much safer way. You can reduce your exposure to these harmful emissions, and practicing a healthy whole foods plant-based lifestyle as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Jackson Moore, for being with us on the Peace and Justice program today. Thank you for everything you're doing. Appreciate it.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So he is such a he knows so much, and I really appreciate that he could be with us today. And one thing that I wrote on, in considering what Jackson Moore was going to talk about, is that democracy is not just pushing a button every 2 years. It's how we live our lives and shape our future every day. It requires participation, effort, commitment, and risk. We are all agents of change, whether we see it or not. But change requires action, creativity, and time sacrifice, a willingness to risk what you have for something greater. We all make choices every day that can either oppress or liberate. We can keep perpetuating the negativity of the status quo, or we can choose life, engagement, community, self-organization, and action. And my question is, which are we going to choose? Because this is coming up, this 5G technology, and I do hope that people will get informed about it. And the number here is 895-0131. Please call up right now and keep our folks busy, because they want to hear from you. I have Diane Suzuki across from me, and she and I had an incredible experience this last week, and I asked her to come on the show with me today because she has a unique way of sharing some unique thoughts about the Bioneers Conference. Go ahead, Diane.
Well, I want to just give a pitch again. We're in our Fall Pledge Drive, and the theme is We Are Family. It looks like the goal is $50,000 for this pledge drive, and we're at $40,000, so we need to keep going with it. And Chris's show has a goal of $500. So call now. Call Sarah and Gail are waiting for your calls. 895-0131. 895-0131. Call now. Support peace and social justice.
So in my mind, I am at the Bioneers Conference, and when I got back, I had a different relationship with plants. For some reason, things were resonating for me in a way that they hadn't before I went. It was almost like being stoned or something. I felt like they were reaching out to me, and I was sensing them better. And I don't know who said what, when, but it was just the experience, I guess. But why don't you tell us?
And being around all those people that... that believe the same way.
You know?
We are all there in respect to the planet. And this Bioneers was the 30th year. And the theme was seeding the field, growing transformative solutions, which is really a theme for me. Let's look for some transformation. And there's a sub quote, and it was, "Hope is a verb with its sleeves rolled up," by David Orr. I just love that. And so the outside of the Bioneers was the opening greeting by Nina Simons, who's one of the founders of Bioneers with her husband Kenny Osobel. And what I noticed on that first day of the 3-day conference was the emotional tone that was set by Nina in the sharing of the death of her mother. She just right away was vulnerable and transparent about where she was at. And it really modeled, I think, an important aspect of our work in this present time, that we've got to let ourselves be in that kind of a state to, for me at least, it just opened me up. And I think the whole room, hundreds of people, our hearts were just opened up, and that began the whole transformative process for the weekend. And the analogy of her losing her mother and the theme of Bioneers, and that I think 90% of the attendees there felt like we may be losing our Mother Earth, you know. So that it just makes me want to cry right now, just that whole right then, just right at the beginning, we were set up for that, those emotions. And I know that I just looked around. So many of us were sobbing, really. And then not only, personally for me, you know, I was sobbing for that, but also what we've been going through in our community with our climate refugees and our PTSD. And I just feel like I was releasing everything all at once, because I really hadn't done that. I'd been just trying to hold up for everybody, you know, and anyway, it was just a time to do that, it felt, for me. And then the plenary, to me, felt like the thread was pulling on the feminine, I think, throughout the whole Bioneers, which I hadn't really noticed last year, and a lot of the speakers talking about that we've got to let the feminine lead. And that was Jerry Tello, who was talking about sacred manhood. And he talked about a lot about his grandmother, and his grandmother would bless him up, is what he said. Every morning she would do prayers and bless him up. And, you know, as a kid and as a teenager, he'd go, oh, my grandma, what's she doing? But it just led him to his spiritual sacredness side. And again, that was the feminine being pulled in. And then Terry Tempest Williams, who's such an environmental earth lover, she asked us, how do we find the strength to not look away from all that's breaking our hearts? What if our undoing leads us to our becoming, and we are eroding and evolving together at once? Beauty is its own resistance, and water can crack stone. Stone is alive, and listen to stone. And then at that point, she played this recording that was a pulsing of Castle Rock, a structure over in Utah where she lives. And it was this deep, resonant vibration of the earth. I mean, it was just rattling and vibrating us. So, you know, as a whole room full of people, we were...
Through your whole torso. You could feel it. Yeah,
we were resonating with the earth. Mm-hmm. It was so amazing. Mm-hmm. So that was the somatic experience that was coming in, also that was a thread throughout the Bioneers this year. I did attend another workshop in the afternoon with Jerry Tello and two other men, and it was on sacred manhood, because I wanted to experience that. What it was like for the men to be speaking. And Jerry uses a lot of humor as well, and he talked about the messages of his ancestors, and of course about his grandmother, and how healing comes from the feminine. He just said it straight out, and I just thought that was wonderful. And Eve Ensler was another superstar. Oh my goodness! And Eve Ensler is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if she's talked about her abuse publicly before. Do you know that about her past? She was abused by her father throughout her childhood.
Yeah, she's somebody who has never lied about anything. She's always right out there, and that's why, you know, people might be aware of the vagina monologues. That's how you might know her, and her work in the Congo.
Africa, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
For women who have been abused.
Well, her latest book is called The Apology. And what I captured from that, and she shares a lot of the process about apologies, and she turns it around and says it's not a mandate on the victim to forgive the perpetrator, but it's the perpetrator that must authentically apologize. You know, like South Africa with the reconciliations, but she's really calling for that's really what's needed.
It is very much needed on a family level as well as on a national level.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
On behalf of the planet, including. Yeah, included. And then in another afternoon workshop, I'm just talking about day one because there's too much to cover. I attended a workshop called Grief, Sacred Rage, Reckoning, and Revolutionary Love. And that, again, was with Terry Tempest Williams, Eve Ensler, and then Valerie Carr, K-A-U-R. And she is the reason why I jumped at attending this year's workshop, because I saw a video of her right after Trump was elected. You know, I usually, when there's these catastrophes, I'm always searching for something that's going to hold me over through the craziness. And so Valerie, the video featured her doing some hip hop and then talking at Reverend Barber's church. And if y'all know who he is, he's part of the Poor People's Campaign. And she talked about how hard it was to have her young son be a brown boy in this country, how traumatic that, you know, that is, being a new parent. And then also that she sees this time as a time of transition, and that in this transition, we ask, is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? Mm-hmm. And then she leads to, we are birthing something new. And then she asks the church, and what does the midwife tell you when you're in transition? And the whole church goes, breathe! And then what does the midwife tell you to do? And the whole church says, push! And so she told that story again at Bioneers, which I had already heard. But what I did learn new about her was that her uncle was the first person to be killed in a hate crime after 9/11, and that spurred her on to be a civil rights lawyer.
And he was Sikh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's her grandfather's tradition.
Right.
So that was heavy. And so she has a group, an organization that she's calling Revolutionary Love. And she says, she became a civil rights attorney in response and evolved her thinking and heart to why our times are calling for revolutionary love, reclaiming love as a form of sweet labor, fierce, demanding, and life-giving. We can harness all of the body's emotions of grief, rage, and joy to this revolutionary love and draw upon the wisdom of the midwife when in labor to breathe and to push.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Diane. Thank you. Thank you for bringing us all of that. And I was there too, but for me, it's all kind of incoherent and working within me. And one of the things I did was go to a lot of the Paul Hawken things and bought his book, Drawdown, which is a comprehensive plan about proposals to reverse global warming. So I got into the more wonky part of it, and that is an important book for people to know about, and all these different steps that are really meaningful and don't turn aside from what we need to do.
Oh boy, there was so much information, probably 10 workshops per afternoon, you know, so it was,
yeah.
So that was what was good. A contingent of Chico, Butte County people did go there, and we all come back with new different information that we can share
in different ways that will employ it too.
Yes. Piece of the feminine. I went to a few more workshops where there were some indigenous elders and a young person that was Mayan, and three other women that were talking about economics of philanthropy. Anyway, they were also amazingly articulate with their, so hep on all the language, and I was blown away how people could speak so well on all these different subjects.
And it is incredible. And I think Laurel wanted to say something. Just a sec. Go ahead.
Oh, just that you made your goal already.
Do you mind if I
surpassed it? And can so I, they've raised it on you.
Can I have a new goal of $1,000?
Yeah, $1,000.
Yay!
Sounds great.
I think. there we go. The chimes have spoken.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Bob
everyone.
Spear and Jimmy Gomez contributing as well, and Gail Kimmel. I don't know if you mentioned her the first time, but yeah. So we're up to 710.
Oh, that is so wonderful. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job. But what is it? 895.
0131.
Keep calling.
Yeah, yes.
Please.
You know, and public affairs programming is so important. I speak not just for myself, but for Ecotopia, the real issue, and everybody, all the syndicated shows, all of us are trying to share information and help our community in ways that are important to protect the program and the uniqueness of this community radio station, where I'm very proud to represent these 27 years of peace and justice going forward with your financial supports, and also to reach out to younger people, diverse people, to get involved, to make this station your home and your voice, to come in and not have fear about a new thing. We are here, and we need you, because all of us are in our 60s and 70s who are at this table right now, and Diane and Laurel and I, and we want you to not just pay, you know, like a listener, but also to become community radio. Mm-hmm. The next phase of community radio. And out there for the pledge drive, there are a number of wonderful pledge premiums, one of which is New Year's Eve show at the Sierra Nevada for a $75 pledge. And the hoodies, now that it's getting cold, are for the $75 pledge. But the one I wanted to mention is the book Shut It Down. I had Lisa Fithian here on community radio with me a couple of weeks ago, and she has written an amazing book called Shut It Down, Stories from a Fierce, Loving Resistance. And if you didn't hear her, she is amazing. She is a treasure to the social justice movement. She is a generation of leaders who know how to occupy Wall Street, shut down World Trade Organization, stand the ground in Tahrir Square, help in Hurricane Katrina in realistic ways. She's a nation's best-known protest consultant. Anyway, I have her book here. It's life-changing, and it is just for $40 pledge. I would recommend it. And I bought a couple of copies for the station for this pledge drive. So 895-0131.
So, Chris, we're $90 until we reach the 1,000 goal.
Oh my goodness! How did that happen?
I know, we're at 9:10.
Oh my goodness!
Yes, Sheldon Fraser came in.
Sheldon,
thank you so much to everyone who's supporting.
And thanks, Sheldon Fraser, for his work on chat, Chico Housing Action Team.
So 895-0131.
It is so critical, the work that the people at chat are doing. We're going to have another guest on, but I want to really quickly give some announcements. So today there is going to be a rally at 4:45. It is what we're calling a forced birth fundraiser at the BMU, and there is a Religious Pregnancy Center annual fundraiser, and Women on Reproductive Defense will have a rally for reproductive rights. A peaceful rally there in front of the BMU at 4:45, and also tonight, the CSUC Great Debate at 6:15 in PAC 134 at the Chico State Campus. They will be talking about the Green New Deal, and our council member Alex will be presenting on that. And I think it'll be really worthwhile to go to that. And then the things I underlined for you to know about also are the Chico Peace and Justice Center dinner is October 27th. Ali Sassour is the guest speaker. He'll be talking about the Palestinian diaspora celebration of culture and history. Tickets are available at Eventbrite and also Pullen Cyclery. Also this weekend, the Wild and Scenic Festival, Friends of Butte Creek, will be putting that on at the Big Room on the 26th. And also wanted to make sure that you know about Occupy Beale, which is coming up. We go to Beale Air Force Base every month to protest drone killing. And you would have to get hold of me, Chris Nelson, at kzfr.org for more information. And lastly, I want to mention Tarana Burke is going to be at Chico State. And she is the founder of the Me Too movement. She currently serves at the Girls for Gender Equity in Brooklyn as a senior director. She is a lifelong campaigner for activism to help girls and women who have experienced sexual harassment, abuse, or assault. This is a wonderful opportunity to hear a great woman. You can get tickets at the University Box Office and Chico Performances, or at 898-6333. Okay, we need to get Marianne Grady Flores on the line, and also call 895-0131, your community radio station. Help us keep this station strong, vibrant, and on the air. And thank you, Diane Suzuki, for coming in, and you're wonderful. I'm just so lucky to have these great women here today. All right, so is she on the air?
Mm-hmm.
Want to do it?
No.
You ready?
No, music.
Music. Okay, music it is, Laurel says. Here we go.
This is a song for the time, Joe. Show me your peace sign. When there's no sign of peace, from the north to the south, to the west, to the east, from the top 1% to every man on the street, every woman rising up, and every child in the Middle East. It's the little things in this great big world, and it don't matter if you're a boy or a girl, and it don't matter if you're someone in between. I know you know what I mean. I wanna be standing next to you, standing next to you. When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes, I wanna be standing next to you, standing next to you. When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes, show me your peace sign. When there's no sign of love, you just can't sweep hate down under the rug. Too many guns, too many drugs. I got an olive branch, I need a dove. Cause I was born with every blood up in my veins. Every country you could visit, every city you could name. Everyone is different and everyone's the same. I know you know what I'm saying. I wanna be standing next to you, standing next to you.
All right, the revolution. It's a ways off, but we have Michael Franti to help us sing about it and get it into our hearts. And, you know, there's very few people who will put themselves out, who are courageous enough to risk arrest. And I have on the line with me a very important peacemaker who's been arrested many times herself. She's Marianne Grady Flores, and her sister is facing 20 years in jail with six other Kings Bay Plowshares activists. And yesterday their trial concluded, and welcome to KZFR. And Marianne, I would love you to tell us about what happened yesterday.
Yes, well, Chris, I'm so grateful to you and to all your listeners there in Chico, California, for paying attention. I'm actually sitting here with Ellen Barfield, who's a part of the media team. Ellen and Bill Offenlock and I have been trying to do support to get the word out around the country and to help people to, you know, see where our website is and know the issues that the seven very courageous Plowshares actors and disarmers of nuclear weapons, you know, where to help their voices get out into the world. And one of the seven defendants, Father Steve Kelly, is sitting in the Brunswick County Jail probably until the sentencing, which will happen, where we hear from the judge within 60 to 90 days. Mm-hmm. And these good folks who went into the Kings Bay Naval Station, the submarine base that houses nuclear weapons on six Trident submarines. The folks went in to do a nonviolent symbolic disarmament action. And this past week, we got to hear something and see something that has never, ever been shown in court before. And that was video footage of the actual sacramental disarming of symbols of the weapon. The seven defendants broke up into three groups. My sister Claire and Claire Grady, Martha Hennis, and Claire and Martha went to the engineering building, the Swift Land building, where they, at the door on the exterior of the building, put up crime scene tape, which the government kept using a euphemism and changing the name. It said, let me turn that off. That was the timer. So the two of them very specifically put spray-painted messages, sacramental messages, saying repent and love one another. And also another thing that Claire wrote was, may love disarm us all. They also prayerfully poured a little bit of their own blood, just 4 ounces of their own blood, up on the emblem of the Trident sub, what would you call that, Ellen? The thing on the wall.
It's a seal.
Yeah, like a metal seal for the base. And what was on the seal was a bas relief of the actual submarine, which, by the way, is 4 football fields long. And then there's the symbol of the missiles themselves that are housed within the body of the submarine. Those missiles and the monument that the other guys went to, that was Patrick O'Neill and Mark Colville, those missiles stand 2 stories high, some of them. So, but on this emblem, it looks like a cross. And so the 7 Catholic workers, you know, they follow the Catholic tradition. They saw this as blasphemy. And so they took that little bit of blood and poured it over, as I said, sacredly, in a sacred fashion, to say, God forgive us for threatening all of creation and threatening all life on this beautiful planet that we live on by having these nuclear weapons that can kill, well, twice over the population of the planet. Mm. So then the other two, it was Patrick and Mark that went to, actually it was amazing to hear the prosecutor say the missile monument, the missile shrine. They used our language, which was quite amazing. And even the judge in the decision that was made in the pretrial motion here, in the pretrial decision, used the word sacramental, nonviolent sacramental denuclearization. Now, none of us have ever used that word. None of the 7 defendants have ever used that word, and neither have any of the supporters. But somehow the judge in the decision, in the written word, used that to describe what it was that these folks went in to do. And then the other three, Father Steve Kelly, Carmen Tirada. Steve Kelly, by the way, is from the West Coast. He's been with the L.A. Catholic Worker. And where else, Ellen? He's been up in Tacoma, where the other submarine base is that houses another 8 Trident submarines. And I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. And then the widow of Phil Berrigan, Liz McAllister, who will be turning 80 years old this November. So these three went to what they call the bunkers. They only got as far as the fence. They got into the rabbit run fence, is that right? I'm so grateful for Ellen being here at my side. So anyway, they had brought bolt cutters with them. They had brought backpacks with different things. So they got to cut into the sacred area that houses these monstrosities that threaten all life. So, you can write on here if you need. So, but the folks are now facing more than 20 years in prison.
Yeah.
For being found guilty on the 4 charges, 3 felonies and 1 misdemeanor.
Yeah, I was really shocked that it was a two-hour jury deliberation. I mean, none of your defenses, none of the things that you tried to introduce were allowed by this judge. It was, you know, just straight up and down. It seemed like...
Yeah, well, we want to clarify. One thing is, it was less than 2 hours, a lot less. As a matter of fact, I ran out to go get a bite to eat, and I thought I could take a nap. Because there was all these bins with evidence that went into the jury room, and I thought, well, they're going to have to like start going through all these bins. It's going to take them a while. It would take 2 hours, and the defendants had to ascertain that they were all correct before they even got it. So that took almost about a half an hour. For the items to be put into these bins, and the items were all bagged up. And it was quite amazing, too, to see how some of the items were kept in brown paper bags that were opaque so nobody could see what was in them. And they were told, oh, they have biohazard because there's blood on them, dried human blood. And so they missed the point. There's going to be much greater bloodshed with this if any of these, well, I got to pull back from this because the idea that if we use the weapons is incorrect. These weapons work like as if I held a cock gun to your head and I'm forcing you to do what I want, like the bully on the block. And so this Trident weapon system is being used like the cock gun being held to the head of the planet, which enforces systems of white supremacy and systems of capitalism, which are killing people today.
Yes.
And it's robbing people from the poor. If you all listened to Democracy Now! This morning and you heard of the horrendous condition of, I don't know the total, but I know there's thousands of people in California alone that are living homeless,
right,
that don't have proper housing, that don't have medical care, that don't have. Well, where's the money going? It's being robbed. We are being robbed blind by the weapons manufacturers. The Trident subsystem, the fleet, costs $1.2 trillion. That's the old fleet. And now Obama, not Trump, but it was approved under Obama's time that they can build another fleet, another $1.2
trillion.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm speaking to Marianne Grady Flores, and she is, where are you, Marianne?
I'm actually sitting in a kitchen in Brunswick, Georgia, not far from the court house that we were in all week.
So you haven't gone home yet. Yeah,
no.
And she is just coming from the Kings Bay Plowshare 7 trial. And if you want to know more about the trial, you can go to their website, kingsbayplowshare7.org. Tell us what you need from listeners right now in order to mount an appeal or whatever the next step is.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So on the website, just for people to get a feel for what it's been like here this week, there is a video posted right on the front page on the right-hand side, and it shows the press conference that we had on the steps of the courthouse just yesterday afternoon after coming out. And it's 20 minutes long, but it's really profound, and you'll hear some absolutely beautiful words, and you'll hear the singing of all of us coming out, pouring out of the courthouse. What we need right now is for people to stay alert and to stay coming to the website, sign the petition just so we can get your names in and send out updates, supporter updates. We will be drawing up a new petition that will hopefully go to the judge. But our legal team needs a couple of days to draw letters that would go, they would be templates for supporters to use to write to the judge. And these letters have to go to our lawyer's offices. They cannot go to the judge herself. So that's very specific. And all of that information will be on the website. So it's Kings Bay Plowshares, and that's PLOWSHARES, number7.org. The other thing is, there is a on the website, there is a tab that says galleries. And you're welcome to go to the gallery page. There's a video gallery. And in there, there's tons of videos. And there's one choice one I'd invite people to watch. And that is Claire, my sister, giving a two-minute thesis of the cocked gun. And there's a lot more. There's tons of testimony from people that have been out at the gate of the base vigiling last summer, last August, when we were here for one of the pretrial hearings. One note I'd like to make about this judge, she handed in her decision as to what expert witnesses would be allowed or not, and she waited until this past Friday night, so 1 week ago. Our trial began on Monday morning. She waited till 10 at night to inform the defendants that no, Daniel Ellsberg, you know, the whistleblower of the Pentagon Papers, mm-hmm. and the author of the book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear Planner, this man was on the inside of the nuclear policy makers. He knows the crimes of our nuclear policy. He knows about the many times, I mean, back in the 35 years ago, he described seven times where we were literally 2 minutes to midnight, we were about to press the button in Cuba, in the Cuban Missile Crisis, in Vietnam, and numerous other occasions. So this book that he has is the book that was brought to the gate, to the base, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear Planner. I cannot underline that enough because, as Claire says in her statement as we came out of the courthouse, the truth is not known. The American people are not being told anything about our nuclear policy. The people were on the base, from the base, testifying, saying, I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of nuclear weapons on the base.
Yeah, I read that.
We need to know, and that's what these folks went in to do, a sacramental action of opening up the sin and the crime of the weapons.
Right.
I
just wanted to say that, and this is Marianne Grady Flores that we're speaking with now regarding the Plowshares action. This is a tradition that goes, a Catholic tradition that goes back and standing up to the horrors of war and nuclear weapons. And they are in an important point right now, as these are seven mostly elderly people who are facing 20 years in jail. And one of the things that is important to me to get out to people is that this is not being covered by mainstream media.
That's right. Chris, I just want to clarify, it's not all Catholics that are doing these actions.
Okay.
Since 1980, we've had over 101 Plowshares actions made up of many different peoples. Including First Nation peoples, including folks from other parts of the world where there are nuclear weapons. As Father Steve, who's sitting in the jail, says, the nuclear weapons are not going to go away by themselves. These are our weapons to disarm, is what Claire says.
Yeah. So your anyway, commitment.
I hope I said enough, and I hope that people can go to the website, and I hope you can write letters once we are guided by the legal team as to how to write them and to where to send them.
Right. And
so stay tuned. Go to the website, kingsbayplowshares.org. Kingsbayplowshares7.
You know, I just wanted to say that the commitment that the Plowshares activists show is something that is based on the religious freedom. It's also a necessity that they do this. They are should be protected under international law. And there are treaties restricting nuclear weapons. There are moral reasons not to have these nuclear weapons, which you've elaborated on, and that it is up to all of us to support you now as kind of the focal point of resistance in this country. So I'm urging everyone to really pay attention to this. This is very important. Kings Bay Plowshares 7 .org.
Yes, thank you, Chris, for having us.
Yeah, and thank you for being with us today. I know these are stressful times for you, and give my love to your sister and the others, Marianne Grady Flores.
I will. I think the spirit's high, the spirit's strong, and if you watch the video, you will see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came out singing, "Rejoice in the Lord Always." Again, I say rejoice. So,
okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, and peace. Peace in your hearts.
Thank you, Chris.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
God bless.
All right.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye. All right. So I have to get out of the way here in a minute for Ray Lager. He is doing Playing Dead, and he has an important show for you coming up. I just have a chance to thank our underwriters and to do one more thank you for everybody who's pledged. Laurel says that we have made $1,385 on this show, exceeding our goal, and it is because of all of you who care so much about KZFR and public affairs programming and peace and justice and the people you heard from today, and who are we're linked. And we need to continue to be that way. We need to continue this effort in order to reach out to as many people as possible. Like I said, we need new programmers. We need new blood. And we need you, the old blood. And also, I want to thank our underwriters. I don't want to not do that. So lastly, I want to thank Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Locally owned, Quicksilver provides reliable courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality delivery service 24/7. And also the Chico Arts Center's 30th and Open Studios Art Tour in 2019. There'll be 62 artists in Chico, Paradise, and Oroville, and they'll be opening their studios on the tour with demonstrations and works for sale. The tour dates are October 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th, so we're halfway done with that. Tickets are available at the Chico Arts Center. For more information, visit ChicoArtsCenter.com. Stay tuned for Playing Dead and support our underwriters. And I want to go out with a little bit of CD1. And thank you to Laurel Avalon for coming in today and helping me. It's had a lot of moving parts today. And thank you especially to all of you who donated during this program.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living.
You know, I just want to thank Trudy. Thank you. Thank you so much. Sheldon, thank you. Bob Spear. And I can't read the writing. Linda?
Ori.
Linda Ori, okay. And who's
Chico
that?
Community.
Oh,
Chico
dear.
Community acupuncture.
Chico Community Acupuncture. Thank you. Oh, my woo-hoo. Goodness. And there's somebody's name I can't read, so we're going to figure.
Garrado.
I'm sorry?
Mari Garrado.
Mari Garrado. Thank you. Jimmy Gomez. Orion Nelson, who I love so much. Bess Sisk. Mercedes Macias.
myself, thank you, me, and Katie Irwin.
And Ben Irons.
Ben Iron and Gail Kimball. Thank you to you all, and peace be with you. And thank you. We really, really love KZFR, and we love you, too. So let's go on to this song and finish up, okay? Thank you.
Knocking, making. Couldn't last for long. Now I think I'm able to carry on. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know. Yes, it will.